but it was on honorable grounds. The Senator Humphrey has taken a leadership role in this critical issue and has a pending measure that the committee is interested in hearing his views about. Senator, proceed with your proposal in any way you see fit.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. May I first say that as one of your colleagues, I am pleased to have had the privilege of listening to the discussion on pending legislation. I imagine that this will maybe be the about as thorough a listening in an audience as we'll get on that matter, and I want to compliment you, Mr. Chairman. Secondly, I'm very appreciative of coming here as a junior member at this time of great concern over ecology and the environment. I wanted to prove to you that recycling works, and so now, Mr. Chairman,
I've been reading, we've had some recycling complications, you know. It's infected some of the food that was crated in the crates that had been recycled.
Yes, a little trouble for now and then.
Just hold it down.
Mr. Chairman, we're indebted to you for your leadership in this vital area of voter registration, and we're grateful, and I know I speak for my colleagues, for the opportunity to testify before this committee. There are at least four items of legislation before this committee. The bill introduced by the chairman, S-2574, of which I'm privileged to be a co-sponsor. The bill S-1199, introduced by the senator from Hawaii, Mr. Inouye, and I am privileged to be a co-sponsor. The bill introduced by the senior senator from Massachusetts, Mr. Kennedy. And I find while I'm not a co-sponsor, I surely support the thrust and the purpose of that legislation and a bill that I had introduced, S-2445, which I had hoped to once attach as an amendment but to the Campaign Expenditures Act, but determined that it would be better after talking with the chairman to come before this committee. Mr. Chairman, it's a great pleasure to be here to discuss the extremely important issue of voter registration before this very distinguished committee, which I'm sure will give us some leadership and some action in this area. America is today experiencing a crisis of confidence of great magnitude. There are doubts in our ability to solve our problems and to meet the needs of all Americans, and these doubts are so great the feeling of despair often seems to surpass what was felt by the American people at the height of the Depression or even during the dark hours of the Second World War. Too many of our young people feel alienated, too many elderly feel abandoned, too many of the middle-aged feel we have lost our sense of purpose, and too many of our so-called minorities, the blacks, the Chicanos, the Puerto Ricans, our first citizens, the Indians, feel that they are systematically and by premeditation excluded from the decision-making process or from sharing in what we call the power of government. Now, at the center of this crisis of confidence is the government. And I must say, Mr. Chairman, that most citizens do not spend a great deal of time in a dissertation on the federal system. They just talk about the government, whether it's city, county, state, or federal. And what they say is, in too many instances, the government has failed, and government is unresponsive to our needs, or that they have nothing to say about government, that it doesn't make any difference, and therefore they take no part. Now, these are the themes that we often hear. But the crisis of confidence in government is occurring at a time when millions of Americans have abandoned their role in electing those who lead and govern. In the presidential election of 1968, approximately 37 million Americans did not register to vote and thus could not enter a polling booth. Now, Mr. Chairman, this is not unusual. This is the picture in 64, 1960, 56, in one presidential election year after another, a very high percentage of the potential electorate did not register. I should add that it is a fact that those who do register vote in large numbers. I believe that the figures are over 80% of those that register vote. But our problem, in essence, is the failure to register, and then we have to ask ourselves why. Today, there are at least 48.5 million unregistered voters in America. This figure is obtained by adding the 11.5 million new voters made eligible by the 26th Amendment and the 37 million unregistered voters from 1968. Now, that's a tremendous section of the electorate. And I might add, Mr. Chairman, that elections in this country are won or lost, in most instances, by a very small percentage. And in presidential elections, 1 to 2% or less is the shift of, is the balance of power. And in fact, the unregistered voter, or the person that fails to vote, could have been the decisive factor in many an election that we've had in the 20th century. We know there are many complex factors contributing to the failure of so many millions of Americans to register and then to vote. But I believe that the registration procedures and practices pose a serious obstacle to increasing the number of Americans who participate in our electoral process. What I'm saying, in other words, is it isn't that they don't want to vote. It is that we've made it difficult for people to vote. And the purpose that I wish to project to this committee is to encourage the members of this committee with staff to find ways and means of making it easier to register and to vote. I'm saying, in other words, that the same government that can find you to tax you, and they have no problem, you know, doing that, whether it's the county or the city or the state or the federal government, you don't have to go register at the courthouse to get taxed. There's no problem. They get you. They find you. So we know we can find the citizenry there, and we can get you by name and by address and the number of people in your family, and not only that, what you own, and even what your income is. Now, the same government that is so capable of determining where you live and who you are and what your name is and your address and your age and your property and your income without you cooperating at all, it seems to me that that same government ought to be able to help register people for the great process of the voting, the decision-making of this government. It is ironic that a device intended to protect the election process called registration becomes a barrier to the polling booth for millions of Americans. And unless the federal government quickly establishes a way to remove the registration barrier and still safeguard the integrity of elections, we will become a nation of government by the minority for the majority. And Mr. Chairman, in hundreds of municipal elections, that's exactly what happens. I have taken a great interest in local government, and as a somewhat of a student of it, and at one time, like the chairman here, a teacher, the fact is that less than 40% of people participate in local elections. So the decision that is made relating to who will be mayor and city councilman and many of these other local elections, frequently in state legislatures, is made not only by a minority, but only of a plurality of a minority for the majority.
Yeah, has the senator had the same experience that the ones you hear from afterward complaining about the results are often those that didn't vote?
Oh, I have, Mr. Chairman. I remember when I was the mayor of my city, and I was much more brash then, I guess, than I am now. At least they said so, I'm not sure. But I used to have what we call complaint day. And of course, there have been citizens that come in to complain anyway, regardless of the day. And the first question I would ask is, did you vote? And sometimes people would be rather irate and said, it's none of your business. I said, it isn't my business how you voted, for whom you voted. That's your business. But it is my business to find out, did you vote? Because if you didn't have, as I would say, 30 minutes or 10 minutes to go down and register and to vote, I don't have 30 minutes or 10 minutes to listen to your complaint. Now, I didn't make many friends that way, but it was a good lesson in government. Today,
you lost
I wouldn't.
Some non-voting friends.
I wouldn't say that today. I actually strike that from the record, but. It is a fact that frequently those who complained the loudest, as the chairman has indicated, were those who voted the least or with less regularity. Now, how does registration limit suffrage? Well, we know there are many answers. Let's say you just take certain parts of our country and my home state, other states, this has no reference to any particular one. But a black woman in Tallahatchie County, Mississippi, may say that she's afraid to register. And there was an excellent study, Mr. Chairman, made, it appeared in the Washington Post, which I think might be worthy of the interest of the committee, by Mr. Robert C. Maynard of August 14th. I call it to the attention of the...
Perhaps we should make that a part of the record.
I would like to, if it's permissible, thank the chairman. An elderly man in Phoenix, Arizona, has no way to get to his place of registration. A housewife in Detroit or in Minneapolis doesn't know where to register. We've made it somewhat difficult in some of our cities because you have to sometimes come down to the city hall and there's no parking space. A business executive in New York was too busy to leave his office to register within the registration hours. A mill worker, let's say, in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, or wherever it is, missed the state registration deadline. If it were in Rhode Island, I think it's 60 days before the general election. A college student from Texas can't register in Ohio where he attends school and has forgotten to obtain an absentee ballot. A young couple newly arrived in Los Angeles cannot register because they have not met the state's registry requirements. And I want to emphasize, with a highly mobile population, a large number of people lose their franchise. I've forgotten the exact number, but in the election of 68, it was between 3 and 4 million citizens that could not vote, even though they were registered in one state because they'd moved to another state and couldn't get back to the state from whence they left in time to vote. So we just blocked out a large number of people, and yet we assess taxes on them, federal taxes and state and local taxes. Statistics demonstrate that Americans who do register also vote, as I've said. Figures from 1968 show that 80.8% of those who registered cast their ballots. Now, the Democratic National Committee's Freedom to Vote Task Force, reporting a Gallup poll study of registration, found that residency and other registration qualifications, not disinterest on the part of the voter, provided the greatest barriers to voting. And on a basis of a Census Bureau study of the 1968 election, the task force said, quote, the highest proportion of those not registered and are not voting fall among blacks, those who did not finish high school, manual and service workers, and those of lower incomes. And yet, Mr. President, those are the very people that need a share in the power structure of this country. Those are the very ones that need to be brought in and feel that they have something to say. I think that this is the most compelling argument for national voter registration. The people who feel the most oppressed and the people who know that they have the least to say and who have been cut out of the decision-making processes and the power structure are the ones today who have the most difficult time in registration and who are thereby denied, in fact, the opportunity to vote. In 1968, 62.2% of blacks eligible to vote registered. This figure is only 10% lower than the white registration level. 72% of the families with incomes from $5,000 to $7,500 registered to vote in 68. However, 82.7% of families with incomes of $10,000 to $15,000 registered. White-collar registration in 1968 was at a level of 83.5%. But only 69.1% of manual workers registered. It is clear from these figures that the registration barrier is not easily surmounted by low-income, poorly educated Americans. Now, somebody's going to say, well, why didn't they do it? Well, first of all, a factory worker reports in early to work, and he comes home late. And most of the registration offices open about 9 or 10 and close about 4, Mr. Chairman. And it's very difficult under those circumstances. It's a lot easier to be in an office downtown and register than it is to be in a factory out in the country or in the suburbs or in the inner city, unless there are determined efforts made by the local government to get those people registered. Now, this economic discrimination, and that's what it is in the electoral process, is a relic of the 1890 and 1920s, when states devised election registration procedures designed to limit the registration of workers and large numbers of immigrants in rapidly growing cities. It is clear to me that the current registration procedures deny millions of poor Americans of all races the opportunity to share in governing the land in which they live. And these procedures must be quickly changed if this fundamental flaw in our democracy is to be eliminated. I suggest respectfully, Mr. Chairman, that this committee can do more to reestablish faith and confidence in government by revising our election laws, particularly the registration laws, so as to bring into the election process the people who feel that they're cut up, whether it's by design or by accident. You can do more to restore confidence than almost anything that can be done. It will be a signal to millions of people that this Congress cares and that we're going to walk the extra mile to do the job that needs to be done to get our fellow Americans, regardless of race or class or economic status or creed or where they live or occupation, into the election process. Mr. Chairman, this committee now has the opportunity to permit the nation to take the biggest and most important step in enlarging the American electorate since women were given the vote in 1920. I believe that a system of national voter registration is the next logical step for the Congress to take in expanding the American electorate. This process started with the 19th Amendment 50 years ago, continued with the 24th and the Voting Rights Act, and recently with the 26th Amendment, lowering the voting age to age 18. It was my belief in the fundamental and urgent need to eliminate registration as a barrier to voting that led me to introduce S-2445, the National Federal Voter Registration Act. I want briefly to tell the committee about my proposal, and it's just a proposal. As a matter of fact, I must say that I consider, Mr. Chairman, your proposal a superior one and a better one, and I have therefore joined with you on it because I think it has great merit, as I do the other proposals that are before us. The National Federal Registration Voter Act would enable all citizens of the United States to register to vote in federal elections at the time they complete their income tax forms. Now, some people are going to say, well, everybody doesn't get one, but may I say that the purpose of that amendment was to step up the amount of registration. It was not all-inclusive, and that's why I've joined with the senator from Wyoming, the chairman of this committee, on his bill. My bill would direct the Secretary of the Treasury to mail all the taxpayers that he mails an income tax blank to says, pay your taxes. It would direct him to mail with the 1040 form two registration forms which they could complete to obtain a federal certificate of registration on voting. The taxpayer and his dependents over 18 could take advantage of this convenient registration procedure, but it would be optional. No compulsion is involved. In the tax year 1969, with forms filed in 1970, the Internal Revenue Service received 75,856,703 returns, accounting for 196,750,468 individuals or exemptions. The IRS reaches 95% of the American people. I believe that it is an excellent organization, at least one of the organizations, to carry out this vital function. I repeat again, you see, the IRS didn't ask you to come in and register for your income tax. They didn't say the only way that you can pay your taxes is to register, Mr. Chairman, between the hours of 10 and 4. They made it easy. They deliver it at your door and then send an enforcement officer after you if you don't. The Internal Revenue Service has a deserved reputation for responsibility, efficiency, and confidentiality, all of which are necessary if a national voter registration system is to work. The association of the Internal Revenue Service with registration process would be in the best tradition of taxation with representation. I realize that many people do not file an income tax form, but are eligible to vote. For these people, the legislation specifies that registration forms shall be obtained at the local post offices to be mailed to the appropriate regional IRS office. The bill also directs the Treasury Secretary to advertise this program on a bilingual basis for non-English speaking citizens to all non-taxpayers, advising them of their right and the procedure to register. I would hope that these provisions for non-taxpayers would begin to bring into the political process those who've been excluded because of the inconvenience of the registration procedures. I would like to point out that the National Federal Voter Registration Act, my bill S-2445, does not eliminate state registration laws. Persons are eligible to register through the IRS for federal elections only if they are also eligible to register through the state's own registration system. An individual's registration will continue as long as registration is in effect under the applicable state law. Constitutional residency requirements remain in effect. My bill does not interfere with the rights of various states to make their own election laws. It is designed to make registration a convenience rather than a hindrance. Now, may I say, Mr. Chairman, that I consider this some of the limitations of what was an amendment. I believe that we should go further than that amendment, but I was going to propose my bill as an amendment, and I knew that the Congress would not have time on that occasion to examine all the intricacies of each state law, which this committee does have time to do. No national registry of persons will be compiled or maintained under my provisions. Individual privacy must be protected. There are adequate penalties in the bill to safeguard this program from fraud or any attempt to deny a person his right to register. Now, Mr. Chairman, I consider this legislation, as I've been saying here, as only one alternative. It's just a suggestion, one mechanism among several before your committee. It was first drafted for introduction as a Senate floor amendment, as the chairman knows, because I spoke to him about it. I do not consider it to be a comprehensive piece of legislation that touches on all questions with which your committee must deal. It was intended to be but a first step in what must be a thorough explanation of the voter registration issue. And this is why I was pleased to be asked to join as a co-sponsor of the bill introduced by the chairman, as also a co-sponsor of the bill introduced by the senator from Hawaii, Mr. Inouye. I have co-sponsored your bill, Senator McGee, because I believe that it forms a strong foundation on which an effective system of national voter registration could be built. And your bill establishes, as I recall, a National Voter Registration Administration in the Census Bureau. The administrator of this program will supervise the mailing of registration forms to every household. And there is a 30-day residency requirement for all federal elections, which, by the way, I strongly support. If the state uses this federal system and still maintains their own state residency requirements, the federal government will reimburse them for 15% of their costs. If states use the system and abolish residency requirements, they will have 50% of their costs covered by the federal government. In other words, the chairman's bill places an incentive upon the states to remove their residency requirements for all state officers as well. The bill obviously removes all residency requirements except for 30 days for federal elections. I think that's a very good bill, and it's similar to the ones introduced by the distinguished senior senator from Hawaii and senior senator from Massachusetts. It is my hope that the Post Office and Civil Service Committee, therefore, will report out a bill that will be a synthesis of the several bills that are here, to take a look at all the features and come up with what you can hope to be a very workable apparatus. All of our proposals have the same important objective, and each is worthy of partial inclusion in a final piece of legislation. The responsibility now lies with the Congress to enact legislation which will offer the greatest number of people a way to vote. And, Mr. Chairman, we are not doing that. We have passed the Voter Rights Act. We've passed the 26th Amendment. We've told young people that they can vote at age 18. We really have to tell them that they can vote at age 18 if they can overcome some of the voter registration laws in their state. I know that I express the sentiments of the members of Congress present today that what we're talking about is a nonpartisan issue. This is really a good government issue in the best sense of that term. Neither political party and no member of Congress can be in a position to tell 25.5 million new voters and millions of other Americans who regularly participate in the electoral process that the federal government should not face up to the problems of registration, residency, and absentee ballots, at least as they apply to federal elections. I believe the federal government must establish a mechanism to bring into the electoral process approximately 3.5 million Americans who turn 18 every year. It ought to be just automatic that they are brought in as registered voters. If we abdicate our responsibility here, we will directly contribute to the growing crisis of confidence that plagues our nation today. I raise the issue of partisanship only because I sense a feeling on the part of the administration that it might want to have a safe distance from legislation on national voter registration. I urge that that not be the case. Addressing the nation's secretaries of state on September 1, Attorney General Mitchell said the Justice Department would assume no role in shaping state residency laws as applied to newly enfranchised voters under 21 years old. He also refused to have his department issue guidelines to the states on the 26th Amendment because he felt that, quote, the Justice Department could preempt the legislative role of Congress if it issued guidelines for the states on the constitutional amendment. Now, my remarks here are not to be critical, because the Attorney General's actions in this area, of course, on a legal basis, could be justified. But it is my hope that they are not indicative of the administration's attitude towards a much-needed system for national voter registration. We need the help and the energy and the leadership now of the President on this. And I call upon President Nixon to place the great weight of his administration behind the voter registration bill, which this committee will report to the Senate floor, because I'm confident this committee will report a bill unanimously, not with no partisanship, but on the basis of just expediting the voter program of this country. If President Nixon is silent on the issue or should oppose it, then it will be difficult for the Congress to enact legislation which will offer the greatest number of people a way to vote. I have every reason to believe that the President will support us. It does not serve this nation well to pretend that any American, man or woman, over 18 can vote in 1972 if he or she wishes to do so. Poverty, lack of education, ignorance, old age, sickness, unreasonable state laws stand in the way to obstruct the polling booth for millions of Americans. It's just as if you put a guard out there and said you cannot enter. I therefore urge this committee to act quickly to report out legislation which will eliminate registration as a major barrier to true universal suffrage. Indeed, to act in terms of all federal elections, Mr. Chairman, and to give incentive, as your bill has, to the states to remove residency requirements and voter registration impediments to state elections. I thank the chairman.
I want to thank the senator for his excellent